We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 399. Next week is 400. We are brought to you today by BlueWirePods.com. Go check them out. That's our podcast network that we've been with for a couple months now. They have a ton of great sports content on there. And we're also brought to you by our last episode, the Michael King interview, episode 398. We can just be brought to you by whatever the hell you want, Scott.
No, I mean, the last one was good. I think we're brought to you by Rhode Island, right, for the last one. There's a lot of things in that. If you haven't checked that one out, definitely go listen to the conversation that you had with Michael King. Does he go by Mike? Michael? I think he goes by Mike, right? But it was fun. He's just a really laid-back dude, and you can tell that, one, he loves doing what he does, and I enjoy hearing the fact that, you know, he's got a lot of – it's not just God-given ability where this guy goes and throws a ball, and it goes over the plate, and it goes fast. There's a lot of work behind it. I mean, most people understand that and know that. But when you hear him talk about it and you actually hear like the specifics of what they do and how they go about things and all the different little elements that go into making a professional pitcher, it's very interesting. So I thought he was great.
I love the stuff when he was talking about the working relationship he had with Higgy, and like he referred to himself as a cerebral pitcher, and just like the mindset going into different games and different at bats and approaches. I mean, that kind of stuff. I eat that shit up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You became a fanboy from then on, I think. And I feel like, I
mean, it's cool. It's cool to hear someone talk about, because you're right. I mean, they all have crazy ability. Yeah. To get to that level, you have to have crazy ability. Yep. And then it's just like, they're in the top 1% of top 1% of top 1% when you reach that level already.
There's so many baseball players in this world, in this country. So many.
To reach the major leagues, to put on a major league uniform, you're in the elite
percentile. So then it's just a matter of the extra work to differentiate yourself. Yeah. And then, yeah, there's the freaks, right? Then there's just the freaks, and you can never overcome some of the freak talents out there.
But most of the
guys are not freak talents amongst the freak talents, right? You always have to like realize, okay, you're already a freak talent, but then there's the freak talents amongst the freak talents.
The fact that you can throw that hard and your arm doesn't fall off, or your elbow doesn't explode, or your shoulder doesn't, you know, rip from its socket is, I think, for all of us who are mere mortals, that is one of the biggest things, because like I physically don't know how a person can do that. That's the thing. Like the ability to do it over and over and over and over and over and over for that long is mind-boggling to me, because it hurts just thinking about it.
It's not a natural motion.
No, it's
of
not.
The arm.
The soft should not the be moving that motion way. Is actually the natural motion.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. Underhand. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No. So it's great if you have not checked it out. I know it came out on New Year's Eve day. So, you know, maybe you have not listened to podcasts over the last couple of weeks, but George's Box is also back. That came out on Wednesday. I was on with JJ, and he's going to have some rotating guests leading up to the season before the co-host is announced. So we did like a 2.5 hour show.
Yeah, you guys had a little forever. Therapy session.
At a certain point, I was like, we're either going to end this or I'm going to piss my pants.
There you go. Well, you know, lots of dog talk.
Yeah, a lot of he's had certainly the adventure over the past month and a half. Quickly, before we get into some topics, just a reminder on our 2020 events, March 14th, spring training weekend. Pretty much those tickets are sold out. There's a waiting list. People are in contact with us. But if you are not coming to the event, or you have not already reached out for waiting lists and you're just going to be down there, definitely hit us up, because we're going to have an after party on that Saturday evening. Everyone is welcome. We want to get as many people there as possible. And then if maybe you're at the game on Friday, we're also going to be at the game on the 13th of March, and we can always just grab a beer, hang out. We're going to be roaming around the stadium. That seems to be what we do on that Friday
baseball.
That's a night
baby.
Game, though.
Yeah, it's a night
That's
game.
It's a night game, though. I've never been to a spring training night game.
Yes, you have. Last year.
No.
Was it the Friday game or a night game?
I was not there. Remember my
flight? Oh, yeah. That's right. You did not make it. So the game, it will be, our seats are actually in right field for that Friday game too. So we'll be in like those rows out in right field.
And then Saturday, May 9th, first regular season event at Yankee Stadium against the Red Sox. We have a special event in Trenton that we're doing. That's on Saturday, June 13th. And then Friday, June 26th against the Cubs. That should be a lot of fun as well. Go check those out on the website. The rest are still being worked through on the details. Anything you want to add to that?
No, that's it. I think you got it. Go to the fan shop and buy some t-shirts.
Good plug there. We are going to do a segment later today. I'm calling it 20 questions for the 2020 Yankees. But before, we did get some news. So Herman's suspension came down, and it's 81 games, but obviously retroactive to last year when he missed the end of the season in the playoffs. So next year he's going to miss 63 games to start the season, which means his first game of eligibility is June 5th when they're playing Tampa on that day. This is definitely a harsh punishment. 81 games is half a season to be suspended for.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of details that have not come out around this.
Really, but really no details.
Baseball, they obviously know more than the general public knows, but this penalty is harsh, and rightfully so. It needs to be harsh for something like domestic violence. I don't want to get into, well, how severe was his domestic violence, because I think that's a road no one wants to go down, and it's also not the point. You cross a line, you need to be penalized.
Right.
And he's been penalized.
Yeah.
And the Yankees are standing by it, by their statements that they're putting out. And I actually did like the statement the Yankees put out, basically saying, we stand by Major League Baseball's punishment, and we hope that Domingo Herman will learn from this punishment. Take this punishment and learn from it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you, again, we don't know specifics of this. Who knows if they will ever be released? We don't know. But they obviously deemed it enough to, it was above Osuna, right? Osuna got something a little bit less. So there was a precedent. We've been talking about precedent a lot with the free agents and signings and things like that. baseball loves, and honestly, like all professional sports, they love a precedent. And when there is one, it's hard to go back from that. So I think that after that happened, well, now you're going to get, if you're to go less than Osuna, now you are going to get into that. Well, was it less of a domestic abuse than the other one? You can't do that. You cannot have that argument. You cannot have that argument. You just cannot have that argument because it's a, like you said, a line, and it was crossed. So now there's a precedent for that line being crossed. And they even upped it a little bit from there. So, obviously the Yankees and MLB knows more of the details of what happened. And what you do hope at this point is that Domingo Germán becomes a better person, a better man, is contrite with remorse for whatever happened. And he learns from this, and everybody, moves forward and tries to put a better foot forward. That being said, you have to look at what's on the baseball field. And on the baseball field, Domingo Germán is a pitcher. And we talked about this last episode, a pitcher that was not on the field for the Yankees in the playoffs. And it very well could have been a big piece that may have pushed them over the top with the Astros series. You don't know. But what he was during the entire season was a very, very solid starting pitcher, if not their best pitcher in the beginning of the season. Once Sevy went down, Germán stepped up and was damn good for this team and served a very big role. So if he's there and he's a swing piece that can eat innings and give you quality innings against the Houston Astros, who knows? Maybe we have a lot better performances by some of these other relievers on the Yankees. You just don't know. And the bottom line is it hurt the Yankees on the field. So when he comes back, if he comes back, when he comes back, will the Yankees be better on the field? Yeah, they will be.
Yeah, and it hurt the Yankees on the field at the end of last year, certainly. And probably it will hurt them more from the games he missed at the end of 2019 than the games he's going to miss at the start of 2020. Because the Yankees' overall pitching roster is much better now than it was back then.
Well, right. I mean, last year, Domingo Germán was part of that.
Yeah.
He was in the plans.
Right.
And you have no other, there's no contingency plan when that happens. Like that's, you just kind of deal with what you have.
The whole point of these penalties, if you're Major League Baseball, is you put down a punishment severe enough to make guys think twice about their actions. And it sucks that that's what you have to do in order to make a guy think, should I do this or not do this?
I don't know if it's like phrasing it in the way that it's them thinking twice about it, but more in the,
they have to take a stand. They have to show that this sort of stuff is not going to be tolerated.
Yes.
You can't just go out there and act however you want to act. These guys all have this, probably this like invincibility nature to them, right?
When you're defined consequences, defined consequences is important. Yes.
When you're that good at something and you're making that much money, and I know Germán wasn't making the millions and millions of dollars that some of his peers are making, but he's still making a shit ton more money than most people are making. He's still making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to play for the New York Yankees. There's like an air of invincibility that I'm sure a lot of these athletes get. And you can't just go around acting like a jackass. And it's gonna hit him in the wallet. It's gonna hit him maybe in the rest of his career. It's gonna follow him around for the rest of his career.
Yes, oh, it absolutely is.
As well as it should. And for next season, he's gonna come back in June, so he's gonna be like a second half addition to the Yankees, and that'll be great if he comes back and he's a better person and he's the pitcher we saw last year, and the Yankees want to add him back to the roster. Great, that's gonna be a nice addition, but.
There's a lot of things that have to happen between now and then.
So, yeah.
But strictly talking on the field, when you're having a suspension like this, when you're serving a suspension that it's now retroactive, we know that. Won't be in spring training. You know, won't be participating in any Yankees activities.
Yeah, that's something to clarify. It's not like he can be. It's not like he can be around the team and like rehabbing. He can do his own things off the field, but he can't.
He can do the Jacoby Ellsbury.
Right, but he can't go start. He can't be lining up in Trenton and in Scranton.
Right. No. Until June 5th, that suspension's over. Yeah. Now you can resume baseball activities with the New York Yankees. I'm sure there will be coordinated efforts with whomever he's dealing with. And who knows?
He's not going to be sitting on a couch
maybe
until
he's
June 5th.
Working with Cressy at Cressy Labs down in Florida or Massachusetts. Who knows?
He's not going to be sitting on a couch until June 5th, but he's also not going to be ready to pitch for the Yankees on June 5th.
Well, I don't know about that, because you saw last year how some of these guys, not for the New York Yankees immediately, but probably not that far off, because they will, he will be stretched out. He will be ready to go. He will be throwing sim games. He will be doing all of those things. He'll just be not doing with the Yankees. So like he's going to be getting his arm ready. He's going to be preparing for the season at that point, just yeah. not with the team.
An interesting question from all of this is, does it have any effect on his trade value? Or do you think the Yankees are even shopping him? Do you think it's been something they've discussed? And if it does, what kind of effect has now the suspension being clear have on his value?
I mean, yeah, it's dicey waters, I guess, because now you're talking into you know, to different things. You're talking on the field, then you have, you know, GMs and owners of other teams with potential moral walls that are going up. Like I don't know how everybody feels about a guy that has a checkered history like this. But you saw what happened for...
You've seen teams do this before, though, acquire guys on the cheap.
And what?
The Yankees.
Well, and the Houston Astros. The Houston yeah. Astros, who, you know, if we're looking at morals and ethics and some that are crossing the line. Look, a lot of teams just, they put it to the side and they say baseball on the field is different than off the field. And yes, there are consequences if there are actions off the field. But at the same time, those will be dealt with. But then if you could produce on the field, like that's a different type of bottom line. So the Astros went and traded for Osuna with the Blue Jays, and they got him cheaper, you know, than they would have. So yeah, there are teams that look to strike, I think, in opportunities like that. We'll see what happens. But he's a young guy too. It's an interesting case for him yeah. because he's a young guy that's controlled, and he's, you know, a starting pitcher that really, really, you almost took another level, went to the next level last year. Like we saw him really step up, and he made the
progression.
He made that jump
that we were hoping he could make.
He was one of the better pitchers in the AL in the first half of last year.
The stuff with Chapman, when the Yankees acquired Chapman, the reason the Reds dumped him for next to nothing prospects is because he was going to be a free agent, and they knew they weren't going to be able to pay him.
Right.
This is not the same. That's not the same situation with Domingo.
But it did play a role. It certainly played a role. I mean, you could argue that there were some teams that were not in on that because of
his
history.
I'm just talking about, why did the Reds dump Chapman for nothing? If Chapman was going
to... What do the Reds do anyway? I mean, do we...
No, but if the Reds... If Chapman were under contract or not set to make a ton of money in free agency, they would not have traded him for nothing. They would have held on to him and then let him pitch again and then maybe traded him. I think about what the Yankees traded for Chapman and then got in return in a trade for Chapman. They got Gleyber Torres.
Right.
A top 10 baseball player in the league right now. A 23-year-old. I don't know if you've heard. He's young, Scott. He's a young baseball player.
He's young.
And he's a superstar.
Mm-hmm. And Adam Warren.
They gave up nothing for that. Yeah, Adam Warren. Right. Okay, great. But they got Gleyber Torres.
Yeah.
Those two hauls, 6 months separated, are not even in the same realm.
No, it's pretty crazy how it went down. But you know.
So had the Reds decided we're gonna hang on to him and then deal him at the deadline, maybe Gleyber Torres is a Cincinnati Red.
Maybe. Yeah. No, it's a big what if. But you know, there's certainly a role where the off the field issues take place, and I think it's more of, you know, certain teams may not even be in at all because of certain things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think some owners don't want to touch that. They'll tell their GM. No.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Especially for like a, you know, depending where you are in the country. Like, I think that also kind of matters.
Yeah. You mentioned Cressy, and the Yankees made news. Well, we know they fired Matt Krause, who was their head trainer or on their training staff last year. They fired him a few weeks ago, but they're making major changes to their entire strength and conditioning staff. Eric Cressy is now going to oversee the entire strength and conditioning department.
So
Eric Cressy, the connection to Matt Blake, like, we need the book and all the details on how the Cressy sports performance and all that has infiltrated Brian Cashman and the Yankees.
Yeah, you could see what's happening in the minor leagues. Like, these guys are, they're infiltrating all the analytics guys. And I'm telling you, man, this was a tight knit little Twitter vertical, little Twitter world, not 5-6 years ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, that was non-existent, that people didn't know about unless you were in there. And I mean, I've been following Cressy forever. I've been following Cressy for like almost 10 years now. So the fact that he's where he is now is pretty crazy. But he was one of those guys that would, you know, when I was coaching Little League, like I went and I found some of Cressy's videos back in the day about pitching mechanics and like, you know, making sure that the elbow is supported and things like that. He's been all over injury prevention for a while. And it's progressed, I think, into, you know, some of the driveline type stuff where you're seeing the analytics and all the new technology come into play. And now they're able to analyze everything else, not only the rotations of the body and the different movements of the body, but now you can pick up on the baseball and all that stuff too. It's crazy. And yes, there are some definite connections here. I don't know where they started. I have to believe somewhere down in Florida, because I know he started with a facility up in Massachusetts, and now he has one down in Florida too. So, you know, around spring training, I think a lot of relationships were built in spring training over the years.
I feel like Brian Cashman.
And with the minor league teams.
Cashman was observing from afar and just like, oh, I like what that guy does. And then maybe some drinks were had. Maybe some dinners were had.
Well, I think he sent his minions in well before that, and his minions have
right.
been,
no, yeah. have been watching from afar, yeah. go evaluate this, and then once he gets that green light, okay, let me. And then they've obviously had a lot of conversations over the last couple of years. And it's interesting because Cressy is going to be the head of the oversee the department, but Cressy Sports Performance will still exist and still exist and be allowed to work with other MLB athletes. So it's not like Cressy Sports Performance is now only employed by the Yankees. They're still going to be operating as business as usual.
It's kind of a situation where I don't know if he's still the team doctor, but he used to be. Dr. James Andrews was the team doctor for the Washington Redskins. And I'm not sure if he's still that guy or not. Either way, you see some of these guys, and I guarantee the team doctors for a lot of these, a lot of teams, if not all of them, are actual, you know, they're surgical doctors at a local hospital as well as what they do for the team. It's not a full-time watching every single thing that's happening, unless you're like on the training staff and you're the guy, the head trainer, and you're like watching on a daily basis. But the guy, it's seemingly like he's the architect, you know, he's the architect of how these things are going to go down. And he's able to do that from a little bit more of a distance. So it's an interesting model, but I kind of see it like the team doctor.
You mentioned a few weeks ago when we talked about Kraus, you were like, well, I kind of wish they made this move earlier in the offseason and set something more in place earlier than late December or January. Now we know this was obviously going to be the plan. Maybe these talks were being had for a long time. So it seems like they're implementing an already uniform operation.
Yeah. Well, we saw the turnover. The turnover in the minor leagues with the pitching system, the pitching coaches.
But that's different. The pitching coaches is different than the strength and conditioning department.
But they're all connected. That's the thing. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
No, I know they're connected, but
Cressy and all these analytical guys, they're all connected.
Yeah, but they're doing different. They're connected, but they're also doing. They're focused on different things. The Yankees had
a lot of them were using the same technologies, though. Similar technologies.
The Yankees had a problem with injuries last year. It's something they needed to address, and they addressed it. And you're happy about it. I'm happy about it that they addressed it. You had said though, oh, I wish they did this earlier. But now, in hindsight, can't you see like, okay, well, this was the plan.
Oh, for sure.
But Cressy Performance is an already existing entity that has a structure and operations. So it's not like they're just, okay, hiring a new guy and he's got to now map out a plan. The plan is mapped out. They basically acquired a company.
No, right? No. I don't see it like that. Because I think that what he does on a daily basis has nothing to do with what the Yankees are doing. It's going to be very different. What I do think that there was a relative plan, like, you know, that maybe they were they knew that this was going to happen. Maybe it you know, the negotiations took a little while, or they were in talks, and maybe Cressy was talking with some of the players already. But I do think Cressy is going to be coming in and changing the system and what they do. But there's no way he's not doing it based on what he's using, some of the tactics probably that he uses within his own shop. But I think the look and feel of the architecture is going to be different. But overall, like I think the big point here is that there's going to be a different philosophy. The philosophy behind Cressy and what he does, I think, is now going to be rolling down and getting, you know, deeper into the Yankees organization, and that will be the most impactful thing.
And people will start complaining about it. First injury of the season, people will start complaining about it. They also made Steve Donahue, basically. They just forced him into retirement.
Yeah, they give him a pepper job. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of injuries, this is hilarious news. So we know Cespedes messed up his ankle last year, and it came out that the fractured ankle incident became with an incident with a wild boar. So
I like
a little bit more information.
I like the donkey story better.
A little bit more information on maybe why Cespedes was so willing to agree to a less salary next year.
Yeah, I mean, there were things happening off the field that probably had some contract gray areas. But I love the story. I love the fact that it came out finally. I think all the made up stories about this, about him on the farm and, you know, the donkey is my favorite. I still think it was better for our imagination. But the fact that it was a wild boar, it's pretty good. Yeah. It's a pretty good Mets story.
It's the perfect Mets story. Are you kidding me? Like, Yankees are out here signing Gerrit Cole. Meanwhile, Yoenis Cespedes is fighting wild boars.
Yeah.
It's great.
I love it.
The wild boars are nothing to mess with. They're vicious.
Oh, hell yeah. They'll charge. Haven't you ever seen Princess Bride? Rodents of unusual sizes? They were kind of modeled after the wild boar.
When I went to Israel a bunch of years back, and I was on a group tour, and we were on a hike, and we had to turn around because there was the leader who saw evidence that a wild boar was in the area, and he was like, "We're not messing around with this." I never saw the wild boar.
Yeah,
but we got the hell out of there pretty quickly.
No, it's they don't really care. They'll charge you and take you out.
So we know Cespedes agreed to the lesser contract because he seriously did violate the terms of his agreement. And the Yankees have this ongoing thing with Ellsbury, who's claiming, "I did not violate the terms of my agreement. The doctor I saw was legitimate, and it's not for baseball-related injuries." So people were saying, "Oh, well, the Mets got Cespedes to agree to a lesser contract. Maybe the Yankees can get Ellsbury." But I just think they're so different. And I think that's more information. This information about Cespedes goes to show, yeah, he was way out there, and he knows he messed up, so he has no leg to stand on.
Yeah, but that also could be, you know, one of the reasons why the Yankees did this is to enter some shadow of a doubt that, you know, we can actually. So now Ellsbury has to make a decision, right? Like he's obviously going to fight against this. The MLBPA is going to fight against this, but there is a shadow of a doubt that the Yankees could win it, and then that money gets returned or is not paid out or whatever it is. So that shadow of a doubt may make Ellsbury go to his lawyers and be like, "You know what? I don't want to chance the fact that I don't get anything. Let's just settle and be done with this."
And I think that's what the Yankees' goal is, to settle for something somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
which will help them with salary, with the luxury tax.
Yeah, it would make sense. I mean, the fact that they did this just to you know, meet somewhere in the middle and cut a little bit off is probably much more realistic than them, you know, being absolved of the entire contract.
Ellsbury hasn't been on the field in 2 years, and
seems like 10.
He's still going to. He was the DH in the 2017 wildcard game. Never forget that.
Ugh, I want to. I want to forget that.
All right, let's get to the 20 questions for the 2020 Yankees. We're going to fire through these and spend a minute or two on each one. In no particular order, these are questions that we got, that I had, that you had, that people on the Bronx Pinstripes team had. So the first one, who will be the fifth starter? And by this, who's going to start the season as the fifth starter and who's going to be the primary fifth starter for the season? Because I think those are different answers, potentially.
Yeah, I think they are. I think when we to start the season, I mean, I still believe, assuming he's on the team, Jay Happ's going to be the guy. And when you see that Jordan Montgomery is probably the guy that is vying for that spot at this point, there's an opportunity to you know, hold Jordan Montgomery in AAA to start the season and kind of use him as a depth piece. There's no real reason to rush him up to the major league roster, or he'll be on the 40 man, but not to put him on the 25 man because, you know, I think the luxury of time works in the Yankees' favor.
Yeah, and the Yankees are never going to let Jay Happ reach those vesting option milestones.
Yeah, but so the question about that one, like the way the contract reads, I'm wondering if you were traded,
Yeah, we never got an answer on this, and I'm assuming
the Yankees are still on the hook for him. I'm assuming they don't go over. I would assume that the Yankees would be on the hook. That's why I didn't think it was also going to be traded, because if he goes over...
No, not the Yankees, the team that acquires him, but that would have to be negotiated in the contract.
It doesn't have to be the team.
The team acquiring J-Hap, say they follow my plan and the 2020 salary is split to the team acquiring him and the Yankees. Then there would have to be terms in the trade that say if Hap reaches these goals that are in his contract for the vesting option, then what's the percentage breakdown of that vesting option?
That's where the trade goes completely gone. bye bye trade. Because the fact that the Yankees have that in there, I don't know what team would accept any of those terms for that vesting option. Like, to me, that's on the hook for the Yankees. If you want to get rid of him that badly, well, then you're gonna if he vests, you're gonna eat that contract or eat part, at least a solid majority chunk of that contract, because you wrote it into the contract.
But there is also,
but then the Yankees have no controlling at all how many innings are happening. That's the other thing.
No, but if he sucks, the team's not going to keep throwing him out there, because they're not going to want to keep him for the following season, even at nothing.
Right.
If he's a terrible pitcher,
yes,
he's not going to get the innings he needs to reach his vesting.
I just don't see that as a real likelihood, because he's not a terrible pitcher. You look at the second half of last year, and J-Hap was. He was pretty good. I mean, he was pretty good. The numbers were much better in the second half. He figured out, you know, some of the things that we're doing. And I got to believe, I know it's one of the questions, but if that ball is not drastically changed, and I don't believe it, I think it's going to be relatively similar, he's still going to have an issue with the ball going out of the park. So, you know, whether those adjustments in the second half that he made were real adjustments that he can continue and you know, not have the other guy, the batters, make another adjustment to him, then that will be the tell if he's able to be successful. Because if he can be successful in the second half, he's got the ability. He knows the fastball. There was not really much diminished ability on J-Hap.
No, yeah. When you looked at the velocity and the spin rate and all that stuff, it was similar. The major difference was
the fly balls.
His fly balls that usually went to warning track depth are now going six rows deep. And it's like, okay, well, what's going on here?
And he made adjustments to that. So if he could continue those adjustments and be consistent with those adjustments, again, you talk about cerebral pitchers. You don't find much more of a cerebral pitcher than J-Hat.
We saw him starting to make adjustments. He started to use that two-seamer and a couple in that Boston start mid-season. He had a really good start against Boston, and he basically abandoned his four-seam fastball and only threw his two-seam fastball, and he had results. But he didn't seem to make consistent adjustments.
I think that's hard to do in the middle of a season, though. That's the thing. I think when you have an off season to now understand what's going to happen.
Especially for a guy who's 36, 37 years old and has been doing something for his entire life and has been successful doing something his entire life.
Yeah, it's a very tough transition to make.
Like, say what you want about J-Hap, but he was a successful pitcher for his whole career.
Yes. Yes, he was. And
not a number one or a number two pitcher, but a good pitcher.
Right, and then when you have to make a complete adjustment on what's been working now for the past, you know, 20 years of your life, 15 years of your life, then yes, that's a big deal. And I think it speaks to volumes if he can make that adjustment. So it makes sense for the Yankees, obviously. Like, you have two lefty guys, one young, one old. If J-Hop can make that adjustment and be a guy that can eat 5 to 6 innings on a consistent basis as the number five starter, that's great. That is a great thing to have.
Except for the fact that the Yankees would then be locked into paying him $17 million in 2021, and I don't think they want to do that. The goal probably is, let's see Montgomery get another season under him after Tommy John surgery. Hopefully he can turn back into the 2018 pitcher, not the 2018 pitcher, the 2017 pitcher that he was, and continue to make improvements going forward. And I think that relates to question number two, is this Tanaka's last year with the Yankees?
There's no way we're going to spend 60 seconds on each of these questions. That's impossible for us to do. Yeah, I think it is. I think this is Tanaka's last year with the Yankees.
I agree.
I think they got what they wanted out of the contract. I think he's been a very good pitcher for the Yankees. Hopefully he can, you know.
Had its ups and downs, man.
Definitely had his ups and downs. But, you know, we look at the good stuff, and he's had some really good postseason success. But I don't expect them to be paying him. You see Paxton's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Tanaka's going to be a free agent. Which one? If you had to sign one of those guys, like, to me, they're signing Paxton all day long. He's going to be more expensive probably, but not too much. I bet it'd be pretty damn close. Well, it'd be more of an investment in years.
Yeah, Tanaka just turned 31 on November 1st. So he won't be he'll be 32 at the very end of next season. Yeah. So he'll be 32 when he's looking for a new contract. That's what the age of Steven Strasburg was, who just got 7 years. They're not the same pitcher. Steven Strasburg is a better pitcher than Masahiro Tanaka. But I think Tanaka's agent can go into the offseason saying, we're getting at least 5 years.
Probably.
Baumgartner got 5 years. Wheeler got 5 years. Mm-hmm. Strasburg got 7 years. I think he's going to be looking for 5 years.
Yeah, and I don't,
I don't think the Yankees are going to be willing to pay him 5 years.
I don't think so either.
And if it comes down to who are we going to pay for 5 years, Paxton or Tanaka, it's going to be Paxton. Mm-hmm. Next question is, what will the Yankees do with Miguel Andujar?
Real quick side thing on that. It's kind of crazy now that you think about what's happened with the amount of years now for these pitchers. And when you see Strasburg at that age, now the gap is like, okay, are you paying a guy that's 32 years old that got 7 years? So now if you look at precedent, it's blown. It's out the window because now they're paying old.
But there's
guys.
There's also Dallas Keuchel, who's 32 years old and just got 3 years. So
right, but that's what I'm saying. Like there is no precedent now.
Find a middle ground. But it's going to be a middle ground. It's probably going to be so this guy got three, this guy got five, this guy got five, this guy got seven. Tanaka's going to fall into that five-ish year, maybe four with an option he can hit, five with a player, with a team contract option for some security.
Obviously, a lot of it has to do with what happens this year with him. If he could come out and throw...
Do you think he regrets not opting out last year?
No, I don't.
It's interesting because the market was different, but... he's not going to have much leverage with the Yankees, but obviously he didn't know the Yankees. I'm just trying to work through this in my mind. Like, we didn't know the Yankees were going to sign Gerrit Cole to a 9-year contract, and I think that drastically changed things. We didn't know the Yankees were going to acquire James Paxton, who was going to be due for a contract at the same time Tanaka was.
I mean, there's so many things. So there's so many different factors.
He probably thought.
And we don't know who's going to. You can't think that far ahead because you don't know who's going to come up and be a stud either. That's from the minors.
No, but Tanaka had to have that conversation with his agent and say, well, can we beat what I'm guaranteed? And also, what's my next contract going to look like?
Yeah. And I think that when you're looking at him opting, staying in the contract, and then after this year, reassessing what's happened, I mean, the market's definitely worked in his favor now. I think that now he's going to get probably a longer contract than they expected from a team. I don't think if you're looking before this free agency, are you talking about Tanaka 5 years or are you more penciling him for three? Probably penciling him more for three than five.
Yeah.
But now with what's happened in this market, I think you can now be almost more aggressive at five.
And I think this could benefit the Yankees if he goes out there with a, I got to prove myself this season. I got to have a great year.
Yeah. Love guys pitch. In a contract year. Love it.
Yeah.
Paxton, yeah. Same way.
So the third question was, what are the Yankees going to do with Andujar?
Yeah, there's two guys on this roster that I have no idea what they're going to do with, honestly, if I'm being completely frank.
And I know who the next one is, and that's question
five.
Number five.
We might as well just lump them together. Let's do.
What are the Yankees going to do with Miguel Andujar? What are the Yankees going to do with Clint Frazier?
Yeah, so Andujar is right now is a TBD with the glove. In fact, 3, 4, and 5 are all very connected. Because number four is will or shall I regress?
That's why I put them together, Scott.
So let's tackle all three. What are the Yankees going to do with Andujar? What are they going to do with Frazier? And the other question of these three is will or shall I regress? So I think Andujar and Urshela obviously are directly connected. I think there's probably some, the Yankees feel good about Urshela. What they saw has come to fruition to a higher extent, obviously. But they saw a very good offensive player, a very good defensive player, and a guy that has blossomed. And maybe this is him. They know what Andujar is with the bat. They love with him at the bat. The bat is good. The bat is good.
I'm not convinced they love Andujar's bat.
Oh, I do.
I'm not saying he's a bad bat, but he does not walk.
But he makes a ton of contact.
I don't know, though, if the Yankees love that kind of approach. I think they would like to see him be a little bit more selective. And that doesn't mean necessarily just walk more, because Gleyber Torres actually did not walk any more last year than he did the previous year, but he became a more disciplined hitter. He started swinging more aggressively at pitches in the strike zone.
which is great.
That's a good thing. I mean, you saw what
that's a good
we
thing.
Saw what happened for Even a month when walks, Didi did that.
if the walks don't go up, that's fine. If you're hitting the pitches in the strike zone,
yeah.
And Gleyber had that ability, and Andujar has that ability. But if he starts expanding the strike zone and being just aggressive to be aggressive, that can work against him. And I don't think the Yankees like that approach. I don't think they need to see like a 15% walk rate. They need to see a disciplined approach at the plate.
That being
said, controlling the strike zone.
That being said, he doesn't strike out a ton either because he can hit the balls out of the zone and hit and you know find grass, hit them out of the park, hit the wall.
He did in 2018.
He hit 8,000 doubles. So like the guy is a great hand eye guy, a good bad ball hitter. Like that's part of the reason I think they like him because I don't think the story is told by him not walking. You know, you just said it. If you're hitting more of the balls in that are within the strike zone, then your walks are not going to be there because you are getting on base in different ways or you're making contact with balls in the strike zone. So that percentage will be higher. And I think that they you just kind of have to have like a little bit of a curve with the analytics with Andujar because he is a good bad ball hitter. And I love that. And I do think they like that. I think they like that a lot. The problem with him and the problem will always be with him is that he has no defensive position at this point. Now, if he shows significant improvement at third base, which is possible, I'm not saying it isn't. I think
they
it's possible.
Said he was improved at last year and we just never got to see it.
Right. So, that will be a big tell. If he can play an average defense, and we've said this 100 times. If Andujar is an average defensive player, even a little below average, you love it. You love him because the bat plays. But now with Urshela there, they have a significant upgrade on defense, even if he gets better, even if Andujar gets better. Urshela is a better defender, bottom line. But the offense, there's definitely a gap there where Urshela, if he stays at the level he was last year, that gap is not as big. So a lot of this has to do with the way Urshela either comes back to the pack and if Andujar can rise up with the defense. So it's really a competition between the two guys, I think. With Urshela leading the charge right now.
I think Urshela's job to start the season, and it's Andujar's job to win in some form or fashion. And I think Andujar will be getting time in spring training at first base. I think he'll be taking reps at first base. We might even see him take reps in left field. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
No, I mean, they might as well figure it out and see what the possibilities are and see how much flexibility they can actually stretch from this. But... You know, I think all of this is very, very contingent on the fact that he's on the team because that's a super big possibility still. Like, he is definitely a big trade piece. The other guy, Frazier, that we're talking about is another a guy that they're very similar players in the sense that they're both offensive players and both of them suck ass at defense. You know,
well, they sucked ass in a different way, though.
But they're both bad defenders. So you see Frazier, who sometimes doesn't know his elbow from his ass in the field, and Andujar, who trips over his own feet and double clutches and takes forever to throw. Like, there's just different things, but they're still...
Don't you think, though, Frazier got in his own head with the defense last year? He got a little bit of the defensive yips.
I think that Frazier is in his own head about a lot of things.
Yeah, and I know. And that's a problem.
That could be
that's
a long-term problem. That's not just a yip thing and we fix the yips. That's a yips here and a yips there and a yips everywhere. Like,
no, if
knows?
You have to bank on a guy being... always mentally right yeah. in order to get his
I
potential.
I ain't putting my money
that's
on him.
I'm not putting my money on that.
I'm
either.
Not putting my money on the guy that frames Ooh. An Instagram freak or a Twitter
I'm
post.
I'm making up a question. Who's more likely to be traded, Frazier or Andujar?
I think there's more value with Andujar. Let me rephrase that. I think other teams will value Andujar more than they will Frazier. One, because
yeah,
they can
I think so.
They can put him in multiple positions. He's not a head case. He's a damn good hitter. We know that. Frazier's a good hitter too, but Andujar, I think, is a better hitter. And Andujar, I think, has more potential. I think that Andujar's ceiling is higher, and he's not a head case. By the way, he's not a head case.
Yeah. Yeah, and with Frazier, I have no clue. I actually have – I'm less sure of what they're going to do with Frazier than what they're going to do with Andujar.
I can see Frazier as being a piece. You know, I don't
a piece to a trade.
Yeah, because I don't
a piece to a
trade because I don't think he's a. I don't think he's a. a
I don't
main.
See he gets. I don't think he gets traded though, until later in the season after they have more clarity on Hicks's timetable. Because as of right now, he's the fifth outfielder on the depth chart. Frazier is
with Hicks
so
out.
So one in with Hicks out, one injury on the major league team in the outfield, and he's up.
You know what's so funny is that during our last, I don't even know, I guess it was our last episode, we were talking about other moves that might be made for the rest of the season. And one of the moves that I was thinking about was like they could add a veteran outfielder, like a guy like Cameron Mayfield, he's still floating around. Clint Frazier didn't even cross my mind as being a very real option for the Yankees as a guy like a fourth outfielder or a fifth outfielder, because he's so bad at on the defensive side. If there's not like drastic improvements from him, he serves no value to a team as a fourth or fifth guy. His value's on the offense, but a fourth or fifth outfielder needs to be more of a defender.
Yeah, and when Hicks is back, he's the sixth guy on the depth chart.
Yeah, so I think it's smart for them to hold on to him because they can, and why not? Like, let him just continue to rake in the minor leagues and get better, and then you see where you are. You still have a talented guy on your team in some form, in some way. It's in your organization and ready to go if you need him. So I don't think Cashman's just going to give up on it, but you know, if someone overvalues him, I wouldn't be surprised if he pulled the trigger either.
So the next question is, I guess you can tie it to this too, is how are the Yankees going to use the 26th roster spot?
Well, I think this is more of a philosophical question in the sense of, you know, you can look at almost the way that they would do or the way they would handle like a playoff roster too. So I think the 26th man is going to be a position player. That's how I look
at
it.
Well, you can only carry 13 pitchers of the 26.
Okay.
That's a max. You can't carry 14 pitchers.
Okay. So then they'll go 13-13.
Yeah, and do you think it's going to be a steady guy all year, or is it going to be rotating based on performance, based on need?
It's definitely going to be a rotation.
Yeah, I agree.
I think 25 and 26 could be a rotation.
I think it what it does is to start the season opens up room for Andujar to start the year on the roster without a set position, whether it's DH or position in the field, and you can still get him a bunch of at-bats each week. But I think it's going to be a rotation based on need, based on, and it'll help because the Yankees last year when they were going through all those injuries for a certain time, they're like, well, we don't want to put him on the IL, so we're just going to have him not play for 6 days and play a man short. So you can call up a 26th man and be covered.
Yeah. You know, I think in the beginning of the season, I would not be surprised if they were to have just an extra position player just to kind of see what's happening. It seems like there are so many position players now that are vying for spots, even though we have a lot of definitive spots. The problem is that like guys like Stanton and the fact that Hicks is out, yes, there are locked spots and locked roster spots, but flexibility as far as a defensive position, I still think there's a lot of gray area because we don't know where Stanton's going to be playing on a consistent basis. Is he going to be the primary left fielder for the beginning of the season? I think the Yankees hope so, and I think that would be very helpful for the Yankees so that they can have a Gardner-Tauchman platoon in center field. That would be a good thing. And then they can rotate Stanton in and out. Then Miggy has a real spot at DH. So Stanton being a cemented guy in left field is a big deal, but that's very gray right now.
Mm-hmm. The next question is, who's going to be the first baseman?
Luke Voit's going to be the first baseman.
I agree. It's a question.
I don't know if Ford's going to be on the team to start the season either. We talk about the lefty-righty thing. I don't think it's a necessity that he's there. I think he's going to – personally, I think he's going to start in AAA and then, probably the first guy called up.
So you mentioned this just a second ago, but who plays more center field in the first half, Gardner or Tauchman?
If I had to bet on it, I would say Gardner.
A lot of that depends, though, on Stanton.
A lot of it depends on Stanton.
And that's the next question. Can Judge and Stanton stay healthy? Because it hasn't happened. Hasn't happened since they've had both of those players. One of them has been banged up or one of them has been out. Last year, Stanton was out all year. Judge was out for a part of the year. The year before that, Judge was out. Stanton was banged up with a hamstring. These guys have not been able to stay healthy. You get 145 to 155 games of consistent health out of those two in right field, left field, and DH. That completely changes the outlook of your outfield.
It's massive. So can they stay healthy? Probably not.
They can't. No, I don't think they can.
They're big-bodied guys that are going to get nicked up. And I'm sorry, I had someone argue with me on Twitter about this, I don't know, like last year at some point, about big-bodied guys and that they're not more susceptible to injury because of their mechanics or longer swings. Yes, when mechanics are when mechanics go awry on a bigger guy like that, that has longer arms, longer legs, bigger surface area to cover, that when mechanics go badly, it's harder for them to get back into play and get that muscle memory back. And I think when those things happen, when mechanics get even off a little bit, that's when injuries happen. And I think these guys are more susceptible to injuries because of that. And there's just more surface area, for God's sakes. So I think that it's going to be very difficult for them both to stay fully healthy through an entire season. I think at one point or another, one of them will be on the shelf for a bit. Hopefully question it's not a major injury.
Question number 10, which Gary Sanchez is going to show up?
So this is an interesting one, because the one thing that really we haven't actually talked about a lot, and I think it's totally on trend here for the New York Yankees, but the Yankees have a new what is the official title? The official title is Major League Quality Control Coach and Catching Coordinator for the New York Yankees. The Yankees have a new catching coach, essentially. Tanner Swanson is a guy that came over from the Twins. He was in a similar role with the Minnesota Twins. And I'm interested to see what kind of changes, philosophical, you know, what they're doing behind the scenes, this guy, Tanner Swanson, has directly affected with Gary Sanchez, because they obviously brought him in. They like him. It's a similar story to Matt Blake in the sense that this is a guy that played college baseball. I'm not even sure if he played in the minors. I think he just played college and then went into coaching from there. But was like, he was a health education teacher at a high school in 2007, 2008.
As they all are, as is every baseball
coach. Was an assistant coach at a community college in 2009, assistant coach and a student lecturer at a small school in Washington, all the way through being a head baseball coach, and went on to a major college, University of Washington, and then moved on to operations. So this guy's progressed through a multitude of different positions, but is more of a guy that has new age tactics and goes about things in a different way. So I think it'll be really interesting, and I'm curious to watch that and see that how that relationship unfolds, and how if we see anything different from the way that Gary Sanchez prepares, because I think that's going to be a huge role into how he plays. If Gary Sanchez is on the field, he's going to hit well. If he's on the field and healthy, he's going to hit. And I got to believe if he's on the field and healthy, we're going to see better numbers behind the plate, because I think the Yankees are taking true efforts to make him, to surround him with people that can talk to him in a way that will make him better. I think they're really trying to do that. So I think that we're going to see a good year from him. You know, we saw did he hit 35 last year or 34? 34, 35 home runs last year? I think we're going to see something very similar.
And he still missed a lot of time.
I think we'll see 35, 40
And that's
home
the
runs.
Thing I'm worried about. He's going to miss time.
If he can, I think conditioning is a big thing for him. And that's why I'm hoping that, you know, all of these changes that are being made to, I think, get more longevity from their players, right? Like they want their guys to be in better shape, bottom line. And then to be able to use their bodies in ways that are efficient. And they're able to stay on the field and prepare better to stay on the field. So I hope that is being implemented currently with Gary Sanchez.
The frustration with Gary Sanchez is that you seem to get different Gary Sanchez's from game to game, at bat to at bat, where one at bat he would be disciplined and look like an absolute freak beast at the plate. And then other times it was, well, they're going to throw him three straight sliders in the dirt and he's going to swing at all of them.
Talk about a guy that is drastically impacted when he's actually swinging at strikes big time. Like that's a big deal for him. And if he's not, I mean, that was part of the Judge transition. When Judge made the transition from, you know, from level to level as he was climbing the minor leagues and then again in the major leagues, the bottom line is if he's swinging at strikes and laying off pitches that he has been enticed, you know, before with, then he's going to be a better player. Some guys can go out of the zone and hit it like Miggy, but most can't. And Sanchez cannot do that as well as other guys. So, yeah, discipline's huge.
A-Rod maybe famously called Gary Sanchez the Yankees' best complete hitter. He said this at the beginning of 2018 and obviously hasn't happened since then. But you see flashes of it where you're like, oh, if he can channel that always, he is their best hitter.
I think discipline is a key word for Gary Sanchez, because it's offensive and defensive. Homeboy needs to be able to block the ball efficiently. And I'm not just saying block the ball for blocking the ball's sake. For all of us, like watching a ball going by.
Well, he did improve blocking last year, but it came at the sacrifice of pitch framing.
So they say. But at the same time, my point is that when when he's
so they say they are saying
Well, I guess the umpires
do you not believe that?
I guess the umpires I don't believe in the pit the frame. I've talked about this 1,000 times. I don't like that stat, the framing stat. You could
whether you like the stat or not,
it has a direct it's including the umpires. I don't think it's a good stat. I don't think it's a good stat. Anyway,
This has nothing to do with the stat.
It does.
No, it doesn't. It has nothing to do with the stat. He was selling out to block pitches that previous seasons he was not selling out for. And that caused pitchers to get fewer strikes.
If he is consistent with his mechanics and actually commits to these mechanics and is able to do these things and gets that muscle memory down, I can't believe we're talking about a guy who's in the professional ranks of baseball. Talk about freak athletes. Don't have to try. I mean, the guy is a freak athlete with the bat, a freak athlete with the arm. He has to work on the other parts of his game. And if he puts in the time to do it, he could be a phenomenal catcher. Because I think he's got the abilities to do all of it. I think he's got the abilities to do everything. I really do. It's just a matter of him committing to those mechanics. And I think a new guy with a new approach can only help that.
At number 11, can Higgy handle the backup role? And can he be a starter if Gary misses time? Obviously ties to that. We've talked at length about Higgy. But I think there's two different answers to this question.
We have a new believer, on the show.
Can Higgy handle the backup role? No, we never said he can't handle the backup role.
No.
But we said part of the territory with being a Yankees backup catcher is you're going to have to play more than your ordinary backup catcher. And I don't know if he can handle that. I'm still not convinced he can handle that.
Yeah. I mean, I think he'll be fine. I think that with consistent time and, you know, kind of knowing that you have a spot is a big deal for confidence for a guy and like not always looking over your shoulder, you know, can play a role too. But obviously the Yankees have shown confidence in what Higgy can do. Just from listening to the interview last week, you can tell that the guys
the
like
first
him.
Thing it's the first thing Michael King mentioned was, oh, he's a great pitch framer.
Yeah.
Like he just said
he's
that.
A good receiver
so
of
it's obviously,
no, he said he's a
it's
good
obviously
receiver.
Known.
He's a good receiver.
That's what he meant though.
He didn't say framing, he said receiver.
He didn't say framing, but that's what he meant.
It's different. A pitcher can think a guy's a good receiver of the ball. There's different ways that you can take that. It doesn't necessarily mean that the framing stat's going to be a top of the league. Doesn't necessarily mean that.
Doesn't necessarily mean it, no.
Because you might have a shitty umpire a lot.
We already talked about number 12. Should the Yankees try to move Domingo Germán?
Yeah, I don't.
I say no. I say no. Don't try it.
There's no reason for it at this point as far as value on the field. No.
Not at this point. This one is interesting. Is this the year a Yankee wins MVP for the first time since Alex Rodriguez? And if you say yes, who is most likely to win the MVP of the league?
I think it's a good chance. I think that Gleyber Torres has an opportunity.
Yeah, that's my guess too. And the reason I'm not saying Judge or Stanton is because I don't think they're going to be healthy enough for a consistent season to be in the MVP conversation.
I think Judge has a very good. I think Judge could stay healthy. I have little confidence in Stanton staying healthy all season long. I think Judge has a better opportunity at that one. He's, you know, I just think he's a better.
Well, he's been healthier, but still he missed time last year. And so what if he misses a month this year? That kind of takes you out of the MVP conversation, unless you're Mike Trout.
Yeah. I think that Gleyber's going to put up really stupid numbers. And the fact that he's playing shortstop now is going to...
Will be better. So that won't be sort of that won't be something that people can point to as saying, well, he doesn't deserve the MVP.
Yeah. I don't know how much they're looking at defense really.
I think they are now. I think a lot of writers are now.
Yeah, maybe. But I think it'll help him.
It's not just home runs and RBIs anymore for MVP. You got to be a complete player.
I think that him going to shortstop definitely helps him. Plus he's a shortstop, and I think that just out of the gate helps.
Yep. How does the three-batter minimum rule affect Yankees and other teams' roster makeup?
Not that much. You can't really I don't know how you adjust.
Well, I think
I don't know how you adjust the makeup of your
that lefty specialist that only comes in for one batter is no longer on the
that
team.
Guy's really not very. He's not prevalent.
A couple teams have him still.
Yeah,
the Yankees don't. The Yankees bullpen is not built that way, and I'm glad it's not built that way.
It's already been lessened throughout the league anyway. So, like that guy doesn't have a job right now. There's no reason for that guy. Like Mike Myers doesn't pitch in the major leagues with this rule.
Will number 15? Will the baseballs be juiced again?
Depends what you're at. What you're saying by juiced?
Will they be the same?
The seam height?
Will we see the same kind of ball? Will we see the same ball we saw last?
I think
year?
It'll be similar. I think they'll probably. I would say that they make.
You think they get rein it back in a little bit?
I think they try to make incremental changes, slight changes to the seam height, as to appease, you know, teams enough. I don't think it's going to be. I mean, look, when we're talking about it anyway, like you could see it visibly by the eye, but still it's very, the increments are extremely small. So I think they'll tweak a machine, you know, like, you know, maybe like a 16th of a turn with the screwdriver.
But if you start to, dial it back a little bit, I think that's smart on their part.
Yeah. You don't want it to be a storyline.
You don't want Justin Verlander at the All-Star game bitching about the baseball. Baseball does not want that.
No, it's an excuse that nobody wants to hear. Nobody wants to hear excuses. They just want to see good things happen on the field and let the players take the accolades for that, not an excuse in why players are hitting or doing what they're doing.
Yeah, it's bad PR, though.
It's also bad for the players.
It's bad PR.
The players
bad
don't want to hear that shit either. Because what they're thinking in their heads, too, is that, oh, I just hit 25 home runs, and now they're not going to pay me like I hit 25 home runs because now they're going to blame it on the ball when I go to arbitration. Now they're going to, in arbitration, they're going to say, well, the ball.
Well, 25 home runs doesn't mean the same if the league average is 21 home runs.
Right.
Well, you're only four above league average for your position. So, sorry, when 25 home runs used to mean, oh, you're 12 home runs above league average. That's really good. It's a big difference.
And it could be a very bad thing for guys who are actually making that adjustment to try to improve their launch angle and may have done that anyway, to the guys that are just now, you know, taking advantage of hitting fly balls, and they're just going out.
So number 16, can Jonathan Loaisiga contribute in a real way, bullpen or rotation?
He's got to throw strikes, man. Like he really disappointed me last year because when we saw what he did in the minor leagues as far as throwing strikes, the guy was phenomenal around the strike zone. And when he came up and wasn't able to locate the ball, I was taken aback. I was surprised that he wasn't able to that he was throwing as many balls as he was. So unless he can throw strikes, he's got the stuff. I mean, he's got good stuff. But if he can't come in that zone, then no, he's got no business succeeding in the major leagues. You've got to be able to throw strikes consistently and then be able to work off of that. And if you can't do that,
especially if you're going to be in a bullpen role, you can't come out of the bullpen and start throwing balls.
No.
Yeah, but
we already have Ottavino projects.
I think he projects to be a solid bullpen guy.
I think he projects as that guy that they could potentially take. He's going to be competing with guys like Sessa and Holder and those guys. So and Adam Warren and, you know, the guys that are at the back of that bullpen and are potentially going to be eating innings or coming in for a cleanup or, you know, a spot start somewhere. Like, that's who he's competing with. So yeah, but you got those strikes.
Number 17 is interesting. Which farmhand is most likely to contribute significantly in 2020? And it's interesting because the roster, this is like a lot of set pieces on the roster already. It's like, maybe this guy can be in the bullpen. Maybe he can compete for the fifth starter job. Maybe he can be the fifth outfielder. It's not like, oh, we need a starting left fielder.
So I think the clearest path to a starting spot for a guy that's in the minor that would be in the minor leagues that has the potential to be in the major leagues is Mike Ford. I think that there is a very clear path to Mike Ford being the starting first baseman for the Yankees. If Voit comes out and, you know, if there's an injury, Mike Ford's your first baseman. If there is any kind of struggles, if he regresses in any way, I could see a clear path where Mike Ford gets an opportunity. So if I'm a betting man, I could see him getting a significant time up at first base because we've seen the revolving door for the New York Yankees at first base for however many years now.
It's going on 6 years.
And yeah, ever since Teixeira was gone, Mike Ford can, and he's a lefty bat, which I think, you know, maybe that helps him a little bit more, you know, even if they don't really, you know, go live or die by the right-handed left-handed, it's still appealing, I think. So I think
that's a good answer. Forward, no, right? I think that's a really good answer.
You got to look at direct paths, I think, because there's too many contingent, too many things in play.
I mean, pitching will contribute, but like significantly, I don't know who's going to make the significant contribution. I think there's like a group contribution from the minor league pitching staff, but you get that every year.
Like, the next question is Davey Garcia. What will we see with Davey Garcia?
I wouldn't even say Davey Garcia is going to contribute significantly in 2020. I still think he needs to do a lot in AAA before he gets a real shot in the majors. Will he appear in the majors? I think yes, but I think it's going to come late in the season.
Well, I think there's going to be totally, it's going to be totally contingent on what they see him as in the long term. So one, he could definitely be a trade piece. There's 1,000%. They gave up Justin Sheffield, who was their number one prospect, number one pitching prospect for James Paxton. So we've seen that happen before. Very possible. But is he going to be a starting pitcher, or is he going to be a reliever when he comes to the major leagues on a consistent basis? That may change. Who knows? They may try him at starting pitcher in spring training, and then, you know, have him stretched out, and then make a change, and he could become a reliever. It depends on what they do. If he's a reliever, there's a more direct path for him being a major contributor, because he could be much better if the ability of Davey Garcia is what we think it is. He's probably better than Sessa, than Warren, than Holder, than Loaiza. Like, that guy, talent wise, you know, if you're talking to some of the scouts and the people who are developing or who are evaluating this talent, probably put Davey Garcia at the top of that.
Yeah, and they have to decide what's he going to be long term, because you don't want to, when there's no desperate need, and right now, sitting here, there's no desperate need for him to be in the starting rotation or him to be in the bullpen. So you're not going to dictate what he's doing based on a desperate need. You're going to do what's best for the player in the long term.
Right.
And if there's no, if they think, okay, this guy is going to be a major league starting pitcher long term, they're not going to bring him up and put him in the bullpen just because. Maybe they will in September.
Yeah, I mean, they could do it later in the season, yeah.
But they're not going to do that in July just because.
No, it'll be need, you know, if something happens that dictates what they need another pitcher. And him also, like, they're very parallel to him having success in AAA. I mean, I said this about Loaiza, but it's important. He's got to be able to command the zone. If he can't throw strikes, and I think he made significant strides in that.
Well, we saw him struggle a little bit when he went from AA to AAA.
But made adjustments and pitched very well at the end. I think that if that's a guy that can make those adjustments and they see that, that's huge. The Yankees like these guys when they're making these significant adjustments and you know, like, getting to the next level and able to succeed, even if they falter in the beginning. It's how you make those adjustments. So I think Davey Garcia could absolutely be in play for a significant role, but yeah, there's no rush on him. There's definitely no rush on him at this point.
I like question 19.
That could change. That could change very fast, though, with what happened last year and the amount of injuries that happened. Like, Davey Garcia could be the number three starter in June.
Oh, number 19, which Yankee who signed elsewhere will be most missed? So Didi in Philly, Dylan Betances with the Mets, Austin Romine in Detroit.
Those will be the three most missed, like, by fans of, like, compassion, yeah, like that type of the so,
or most missed on the field.
I think they're different questions. Yeah, the most missed on the field, I because Glaber's stepping into that shortstop spot, I don't think there's a ton there for Didi as far as, like, what we're missing on the field, honestly. Betances definitely could if he's healthy.
But Betances wasn't on the field last year.
But we know what he is on the field. That's the thing.
We know what he is.
If he's healthy and he's pitching for the Mets and he's pitching lights out, it's going to piss a lot of people off.
Could it actually be Austin Romine?
No.
Most missed on the field?
No. No, it's not going to be Austin Romine. Austin Romine is not... He will get a standing ovation. Maybe not even a standing ovation. He will get a nice ovation when he comes back as the starting catcher for the Detroit Tigers.
There will be a very small contingent of Austin Romanites in the outfield stands who are like, yeah, standing ovation.
People will clap
for
him, though, because he was a very good New York Yankee, as they should.
Yeah, I'd say overall it'll be Betances. Also because he's with the Mets, so he's got the most visibility.
A little bit of hate
as far as
could be a little bit of hatred there because of that too. Could
why it's but the Yankees didn't offer him anything.
You think fans care about that? No.
Smart fans do.
Well, general everyday fans don't give a shit about that. They just know where he's pitching, the laundry that is currently on his back, and that he used to be with the Yankees. So if he starts dominating over there and then, you know, starts chirping a little bit more about he just wants to win World Series, because he did just get quoted by that, saying, I just want to go in the best opportunity to win. Well,
Well, we don't know who else offered him a contract. Right. What if the Mets were the best team to offer him a contract?
Right.
Could be.
Could be. There's a lot of gray with that statement, but that statement was said. And when there's no context behind that statement, it looks like he chose the Mets over the Yankees. And it looks like that he thinks the Mets are better than the Yankees now.
Well, that's just asinine. The last
I will
one.
Miss Dylan Betances, but I feel like,
I will miss
but I feel like I've already missed
most.
Him because he wasn't there.
I will miss Dylan Betances the most.
I will miss Didi because I like Didi personally. Like, I think I became a fan of Didi, the player, the guy on the team, like
I am
everything
too.
Around. So I think I will miss having Didi on the field and being like just a guy in the as part of the cog in the machine, but because Betances wasn't there last year.
No. Didi played like he wasn't there last year. Number 20, will the Yankees win their first World Series since 2009?
I'm not answering this question.
Why not?
Because
you love making predictions.
Oh, we're going to make bold predictions. That'll be a separate show.
Yeah, that'll be later. That'll be later in the
But I'm not jinxing anything right now. I will say this, they are going to be the favorites, heavy favorites, but probably maybe not heavy favorites, but favorites I think to win the World Series.
This is the best roster top to bottom they've had since 2009.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
There's no, I mean, I don't think that's a question, actually.
I mean, they won 100 games in 2018, and they improved their roster, and despite injuries, won 103 games last year. And I think winning 103 games last year, they've improved their roster again and have the potential to win more than 103 games this year, get the number one seed in the American League, play all your series at home, and they're the favorites for the World Series. That's what the Gerrit Cole signing did.
Yeah, it did. It swung the balance of power dramatically.
That's why you pony up, you drop your nuts on the table, and pay $324 million, and that's what that does.
Yes, absolutely. It takes a World Series out of another American League team, you know, if they were going to sign him.
Well, you the team that just beat you in the playoffs got worse.
Yes, huge.
You got better.
It's a
and you, the margin of difference between those two teams wasn't that big to begin with.
Yeah, I mean it's a huge deal. They should win the World Series this year. I'll say that. My expectations are for them to win the World Series.
Mine too, and I think they do. Okay, let's wrap up with out of left field.
And that out, and Sanchez destroys that to left field.
There it goes, deep to left, really deep
in the air to left field. Back at the track at the wall.
I pissed on a public building.
Yeah. All right. Out of left field. As you may have heard, I got married last October, which means we had countless gifts coming to us from the registry. And if you guys have registered at any of these companies like Zola, Bed Bath & Beyond, or Williams-Sonoma, or Pottery, but wherever you register with, you've probably had frustrations that we had. We would just receive gifts with no label of who sent them to us, no record of who sent them to us, and then we have to go on like the scavenger hunt of who bought us a gift. It's extremely frustrating.
But the hashtag first world problems.
It's awkward as shit to text someone saying, did you buy me this?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think they're going to get much sympathy on that, but all right.
One of the things that I think I will get sympathy on that.
I don't think so. We'll see. Okay. We'll see if Twitter sympathizes.
Well, they don't sympathize with anything except adopted puppies, we found out. So one of the things that happened is we put silverware on our registry. We put 12 sets of silverware on the registry, and a set is 5 pieces. It's 2 forks, 2 spoons, and a knife.
Okay, so let me tell you what, first of all, before you even get into this, because it very much threw me off when I saw your notes on this. You said 12 sets of silverware. That's 12 place settings of silverware, not sets of silverware. Place settings. That's a big difference.
So one set is 12 of those?
12 place then? Settings, yes.
12 place settings, fine. My terminology is off. But what we put on the registry is for 60 pieces of silverware total. And what ended up happening is one box contained 60 pieces or 12 settings. We received 6 boxes of 12 settings,
okay,
which equaled
a lot.
360 pieces of silverware. And we're like, oh shit, did someone mess up and buy us? Did it not update and then 6 different people wanted to buy us these things? And this is an expensive gift. It's a very generous gift. So
silverware is not cheap.
we actually the what happened was, and maybe this is why it happened, is two people went in on the gift together. Okay. So I don't know if that affected this in any way, but the company sent us the six boxes, so we had 360 pieces, but there was only record of a purchase of one box of this. So we could we're calling like, well, we got six of these things, like, well, we only have record of payment for one box, so we can't refund you for the extra five boxes that you have. Well, then we're like, well, we're not just going to give them back to you for nothing. They're like, we understand that. This is our mess up. I guess we have to live with it. The merchandise is now yours. So we're using one box, but we have five extra boxes of silverware just ready to go for the rest of our lives.
So what's the problem here? The fact that you have to deal with the other five boxes? Because there's so many easy solutions. And I know...
Did I say there's a problem?
No, I don't know. I don't know if it's you guys are like seeing this as a problem. I know you have a checkered history with OfferUp and other apps, so trust is now a factor.
Oh, yeah, I'm not about to. Although they are they can't really. They're not broken. They're never used.
Are you sure they're not used?
Sealed box.
You're not going through and like using one spoon on your cereal every day.
Well, what
and
I was saying
not,
to
and
Leanne
then not
is
disclosing that fact.
What I was saying to Leanne is, let's just gift silverware for the rest of our lives.
So why don't you guys, you were just given a gift from whatever company that was, right? Like this is an expensive gift. So why not find out who else sells exactly the merchandise that you have, go and return it and get store credit?
Well, you can't return something without receipt of purchase.
Bullshit. I do it.
We tried to do that.
Go to a different store that sells it and get store credit. Everybody gives you store credit.
That's what we asked for. It was from Williams-Sonoma. We asked for store credit. We'll give you back this merchandise, which you can then sell. Give us store credit for this, and they wouldn't do it. We just have the stuff.
Yeah. Seems like you could do it.
So that's the frustrating part, is that we have the stuff, and we have nothing to, we have no use for the stuff.
So you're telling me you go
a long time until maybe eventually the stuff we're using now gets lost or damaged.
Oh, no, you don't hold on to this. You can't hold on to this. It's like heavy, and you live in a New York apartment. Like That's expensive real estate right there.
Well, right. That's another thing. We have a lot of stuff stored at Leanne's parents right now, but we didn't throw it out. We didn't get rid of
right.
it, obviously.
So you're telling me if you walked into a mall and went to like a different Williams-Sonoma and you said, hey, we got this as a gift. I don't have the receipt.
I haven't tried
it. Don't even talk
it,
about a registry. Just say, we got it as a gift. We were told it was purchased here, but there's no receipt. Can we return it for store credit? I guarantee they say yes.
I'll try it. The thing I'm worried about is that it all has like a code on it.
Yeah.
All the boxes have a code on it, like a serial number or whatever the code is, which ties back to our registry.
Got you. Yeah.
So it was just a
you go on the black market, start selling silverware on the black market.
It was just a mess up by the registry, the shipping, they or just like whatever happened. There was a clerical error, and they just shipped the wrong thing. And going through the process of the wedding registry, I'm not complaining. All the gifts are great, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. But there's not a seamless process to go through any of this stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand where you're coming from that. We definitely got like mysterious boxes that came in we had to figure out. And then ones that were like, was that really a gift? Like there were like a couple of them. I remember getting a box from somebody, and sometimes some of these places would separate the orders, right? Because they come from a different warehouse, or maybe one was like back ordered or something. So you only
get, maybe that's what happened with this.
I know, but you only get like part of a delivery, and like sometimes people will package like something small or a bunch of small things, or like something small with something big. And like I remember one time we got like these little pails, like I don't even know what they were, like candle holders or something. I think they were like $4 a piece. I don't even know why. I don't even know if they were on a registry or not, but it just came with like four of them or three of them. And that was it. But I think it was part of another piece, but we couldn't find where the piece was. The other, we couldn't find. So we had to like, thank you for the mini pails. You know, you're like, that's awkward because now someone's getting
thank you
screwed.
For the mini pails that I don't know what to do with and don't know where they track back to.
Yeah. And we can't thank them for what they actually, you know, were giving us because we have no
idea. How much say did you have in the registry?
You know, it wasn't really contentious.
Did you put any things that you specifically wanted on there?
I had a Yankees Tervis cup on there. That was it.
Okay. So what's that cost? It was $20.
Yeah. That was like the only thing I put on. The other stuff was just stuff for our house. Cause we had just bought a house too. So there was like clear, there were clear needs for us.
Yeah, and we have – so that's another thing. We don't have a clear need for a lot of the stuff we receive at the moment.
Right.
We will down the line. Sure. But the one thing that I was put on and very excited to receive was a Yeti cooler, like a really nice Yeti cooler, which is a very expensive gift. So that was like the thing I was most excited to use.
There you go. That's – so we were like very practical with our stuff. And –
which I think is definitely the way to go. That's why we didn't put China on our registry because expensively.
I understand. Does anybody use China anymore?
No, that's why. Yeah. No one our age uses China.
No, we
no
didn't
one
put
our
it
generation
on
there.
Who has a China?
China
cabinet anymore? Our parents do.
People just display it and then they'll use it for like one dinner a year, Thanksgiving
people
meal or
don't.
Whatever.
Our parents do.
Our parents did, but they think that's what people want now. So we actually had people asking, where's your China?
Yeah.
I want to purchase some of your we're like, no. We have so nice silverware, nice plates, and new everything that we can use every day and also use if we're entertaining.
We did the same. We went the exact same way. And I think that when you're going with that on that, because back in the day, China was like, that was a very clear gift that you got at your wedding because it was expensive and everybody needed it. And rather than, you know, newlyweds going out and buying China, which was not practical, you would have it on your... as a gift because then you know your family and relatives can help you out so that when they do
whenever
come over
the practicality shifted thank God because once you start like you need stuff to get going and it's very helpful to receive that stuff. It's not helpful to receive stuff you're going to use once a year.
No, I mean we bought a house the year before we got married. Like after we got engaged we bought a house. We lived in Sin for a year and bought the house. We did that knowing that we were going to get married and so we had like literally things to fill, like voids to fill.
Yeah.
I will know.
And with a house, it's so much better receiving all that stuff with a house, an actual place to put it rather than opening the box, looking at it and go, oh, that's nice. Let me box it back up and take it to a basement somewhere.
So funny. The nice thing about out of left field is it can spiral. So quickly, a funny story. We got plates. We got like a settings of plates. We got them from like Pottery Barn. They're like these nice white square plates, like ones that you can use in different times, casual or more formal. But they're very heavy. They're extremely heavy. And we got, I think, 12 plate settings because that's what you do. And the so we got them out of the box and I had to put them up in our cabinet and I had to separate them because they were so goddamn heavy and it was just so much that I separated them into different cabinets. Anyway, literally like the day after, my wife, I put them all in the dishwasher to wash them first before you use them. And Bevan was unloading the dishwasher. And I can't even say this too loud because if she hears it, I'm going to get in trouble again because she's going to yell at me. She brought them over and didn't realize how heavy they were. And they get very slippery. Dropped every single one of them. Like the big plates just shattered. We had a tile floor at the time in the kitchen. Shattered. Just like, you can't imagine how many pieces there were.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was a gift from my mom, and Bevan was like, "Don't tell your mom. Like we have to get these back and replace them so that she doesn't know." And one day, like six or seven, whatever it was later, I was an ass and told my mom, but I was being like kind of sneaky about it. Like I was on the phone in one of the bedrooms and I was talking to my mom and I was like, "Yeah," and "Oh yeah," and I think I slipped on it first. And I was like, "All
right,
whatever. I'll just tell you."
You wanted to, you forgot. Yeah.
And then I was like, "Oh, whatever. I'll just tell you." And it turns out the window was open and Bevan was outside in our driveway and heard the whole conversation. And she got so mad at me for telling my mom. Anyway, so now it's a funny story that like the whole dropping of the plates shattered and it's and Bevan ruined my mom's gift. So
the dropping of the plates.
It's so many pieces.
I mean, we've already broken things we've received.
Yeah.
Not on purpose.
You'll probably put them on OfferUp.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode. As I said, go check out the Michael King interview if you have not done so already. Go check out George's box. Anything else, Scott?
No, man, we're getting into the dog days. I know you got a trip coming up, too, so we got one more. 400 is next week. So
yeah, I can't miss 400.
Yeah, we're going to
have to be on number
400. We'll record that one a little early. So hopefully nothing major happens, but I doubt it. If it does, I will handle it. But then you're going to be on a, 3 weeks, right? You're going to be...
No, it's two and a half weeks, but I think I'm going to miss three episodes.
Okay. Cool. What we'll have next week is 400. If you guys haven't rated and reviewed the show, we haven't asked for this in a long time. So if you're a new listener and haven't done that, we would absolutely love the 5-star rating and review. So please go onto iTunes. That's the best place to do it, or Apple Podcast, and give us a review. Tell us why you like the show. But yeah, no, I'm looking forward to another week of nothing happening in Yankee baseball.
Great stuff. Talk to you next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.